Thank you. May it please the court, Justice Benavidez, Justice Longoria, and Justice Perk. My name is Amy Green. I represent United Specialty Insurance Company. United Specialty is here seeking reversal of two summary judgments rendered against it by Judge Reyna in Hidalgo County. And we're here, I think, very quite simply, although there are a lot of moving parts to this case, to interpret two different contracts. The contractual relationship between Alonzo Cantu Construction Company and Wasp Construction Company, and then a policy issued by Farmers Insurance Company to Wasp Construction, as well as United Specialty to Cantu.
The first contract, are you talking about the bid that was actually accepted?
There was contract? We would submit that the bid, in addition to the party's understandings and the start of work, would constitute what was the original agreement between Cantu and Wasp that started work the next day. So the agreement is more than just the bid. The bid, if you recall the testimony from Mr. Vinto, who was the representative for Wasp Construction, he said really pricing was the only thing that could be negotiated. The Cantu representative initialed the price on the scope of that work. They started work the next day. The subcontract that gets submitted in September after the accident involving Mr. Martinez was the form contract from Cantu Construction that Mr. Vinto had said, I would have signed anything. I knew I was going to have to provide an indemnity and insurance. This looked like everything else. I had no problem. I signed it when I received it. And so,
however, the bid didn't have the additional insured language in it.
Correct. The bid did not have the specific, what we would consider sort of terms and conditions that's seen. So actually, when you start looking at the case law, it's really pretty common that these folks are doing something in relation to getting this work going, and then contracts that formalize relationships are being written or negotiated sometimes after the fact. And in this case, what we think is unique about the facts that support the argument for reformation here is that Mr. Vinto, on behalf of Wasp Construction, had said he would have signed anything. Now, we looked for other cases that said that. You know, one of our distinguishing factors here is that these folks did not have a prior course of dealing. This was the first time that Wasp was doing work for Cantu Construction. It wasn't clear whether or not part of signing anything was in order to start that relationship, but the reality is the Cantu representative, Mr. Falcone, had said either you sign our form or you don't do work, which is oftentimes the case with the more powerful contracting party.
And we totally agree with it. I mean, that's a standard of course that, you know, oftentimes a bid is accepted. But my real problem, I mean, just to get to the heart of it, is how does that bind farmers?
Well, and here's the second part of that. If the mutual intent of Wasp and Cantu was to go ahead and have that agreement in place, that if it had been signed that first day or maybe the first day of work or certainly before the Martinez accident that happened on August 30th, then I think farmers would say the only thing we'd be looking at is there a coverage defense under the policy that may apply. And for the most part, there really aren't coverage defenses that attach. It would have been bodily injury on behalf of an occurrence. The problem becomes when you compare what we think is the intent of those parties to the provision in the farmers policy in the additional insured, first in the additional insured provision that says that they have agreed in writing. So we do, clearly, I represent an insurance company. There is no question that I am not here to tell the court that we are going to depart from what that language is. But one of the things you note in farmers briefing is that they don't cite to cases that interpret their particular language, have agreed in writing. So what does that mean? And we've quoted to the court the Lida Swinnerton case, which is a Fifth Circuit decision that says has agreed by written contract. A similar set of circumstances in terms of, you know, one of these general contracting parties and a subcontractor owing additional insured and insurance up the line. And in that case, the Fifth Circuit decides with language that's very similar, has agreed by written contract. So not quite the same. And we know there's a lot of different phraseology you see among insurance policies that's interpreted both in the federal and the state court systems. But the court there said written doesn't mean it has to be signed. So the argument for reformation is we get back to what was it that Cantu and Wasp we're willing to do, and we think that that's really very distinguishable in this case compared to a lot of the other cases that exist. No question, and we cite the court's what it is we could find regarding other cases where retroactive effect has been given to parties' dealings. In this instance, the fact that they hadn't had a prior course of dealing wasn't going to matter. I mean, that's the import of Mr. Vento's testimony. I would have signed anything, and I knew I needed to do it. I'd do it for all of them.
But assuming I was trying to follow this hypothetically in the extent of what you want performed is basically the effective day of this contract. That's what United is saying, that really this contract became effective the day work started. And the issue I was having is that if we look at that, then what we're really looking at is it the bids, the bid language, which doesn't have the additional insured language in there. So what are we trying to reform from that contract? What? Is the effective date only? And if we change the effective date to August, aren't we in the same position again because the additional insured language is not in the bid?
Well, I would submit that what's to be reformed is the subcontract's reference to the date that says made this 12th day of September 2014. If they had put in that contract to be effective from the start of work and it specifically incorporates going back, I think the argument would be different. And there are actually cases that sort of say, you know, that's a clearer intent that we mean for this to extend to the start of work. What we're saying gets us to that intent is the party's testimony. Because we have both Mr. Falcone saying you wouldn't have gotten our job if you hadn't signed it, and Mr. Vento saying I absolutely knew that I was going to sign anything you gave me. And so I think what's different here is uniquely that testimony.
So what you're saying is that the written contract was really the oral contract that they all existed on for 2 weeks, which then was memorialized.
It was a combination of the bid, their understanding. If you recall from the record, Mr. Vento testified it took him 3 quotes to finally get the number that got approved, and then they started the next day. So what we would suggest is that in that process, that entire understanding is what's going to make up the mutual assent that isn't reflected by the made this 12th day. Because Mr. Vento particularly, the party to assume these obligations, says, we understood it was going to formalize the bid. We understood that it applied to all the work. So what we see different here are these facts. It's not that that it falls neatly into a category. We actually looked for cases that said, you know, where you might have had a particular witness testify that I would have signed anything. You know, what is the import of saying that? And how does that relate to the farmer's policy? And when we looked at Lida Swinnerton, we would suggest that if written doesn't mean signed, and it's something quite unique about this case is that we have a subcontract that says made this day, we have insurance language that talks about execution and subsequent to execution, we have cases that talk about, we have an assignment later that talks about an effective date. It seems that we've kind of collapsed everything in this one case. And it's not really clear what's supposed to equal what, other than we know that in individual and unique circumstances, there are courts that say if written doesn't mean signed, and execution can include effective, is it not when you look at these parties' testimony, you can take back to that original start of work that these folks were going to do that? And how does that bind farmers? Farmers just says have agreed in writing. Farmers' argument in briefing talks over and over again about the past tense of the wording and all the rest. So we don't believe that language with no case support that specifically has to relate to the timing of the signing, and then the Lida Swinnerton case that says written doesn't mean signing necessarily, that these parties haven't been able to establish that. And so it's clear that farmers, like many other insurers, United Specialty being the case, doesn't want to be in the minutia business of these insureds. That's why they have different broad form additional insured provisions.
Let's look at the bid for a moment. I've not had a chance to look at the bid, but the question I have is basically, did the bid have language in it that would show insurance and other things that were intended for the future to be included in a subcontract?
No, Justice Perks, it does not. It literally, it has the nice identification related. It was to the Edinburgh Community Center construction, believe. It talks about the pipeline and sewage work that was going to be done by WASP Construction, and it has a line item for various price quotes, and it gets initialed and goes back. So as a matter of fact, the subcontract agreement had an arbitration provision in it that the dispute between the parties would be arbitrated, and that didn't occur. But, you know, choice of law, none of that. It all fell to the terms and conditions in the subcontract that was submitted after the accident. But all of this goes back to us having to reform what is the agreement that's going to bind these parties.
Was there any testimony, and I can't recall, I'm sitting here trying to remember, that when they were doing the bidding contract, that they said, and we'll submit all details, because they talk about, the case law specifically talks about, we'll figure out details later in the reformation of some of these contracts and mutual mistake kind of law. Was there any testimony made during the initial bid process by Mr. Falcon and Mr. Vento that says, and we'll work out the details later?
It was only discussed in terms of formalizing the agreement. There was testimony.
So they both knew there was going to be a written formal contract.
Yes, and what occurred, just as you would have noted, is that the deposition testimony from the tort suit was taken and used in the declaratory judgment matter, so that the parties in the declaratory judgment matter did not conduct that discovery. That was something that was discussed, and then the summary judgments were ruled upon. And so they weren't questioned by either Farmers or United Specialty. It was because of the cross-claim that had been asserted in the tort suit. Which sort of leads us, I'm running out of time, but leads us then, if you move past what we have in terms of reformation, which I think is sort of the gateway to a lot of the rest of this. If there's no reformation, then it's hard to see how the same sets of obligations can arise in favor of Cantu Construction. But assuming that to be the case, we get to what happened in this situation was Farmers and United decided, I think appropriately so, settle with the plaintiff, let the insurers fight this out. Mm-hmm. As part of that settlement, there's going to be the funding. There's a Rule 11 agreement entered the day that I think it was close in time to, I forget what was going on. As a matter of fact, Mr. Tollefson and I were involved in those negotiations on the 22nd. But a Rule 11 is entered on the 22nd and is signed by the defense counsel for Cantu Construction, among others. All of the underlying parties signed. And we would note that briefing by Farmers and by WASP Construction that refers to Mr. Sykes, Eddie Sykes of the Royston Razor firm, as representative of United Specialty would be inappropriate. He was the defense counsel for Cantu Construction, as he had always been. Our firm, of course, was coverage counsel on behalf of the carrier and was actually involved, but not a party to that Rule 11. So the Rule 11 agreement gets entered, and then the insurer is going to start their dispute about how this funding may work out. Fast forward to the hearing before Judge Lopez in March of 2018, when, you know, my conduct is questioned regarding things that occurred at that hearing. And what had happened, just as a matter of background, is that WASP Construction had been sort of left out of the settlement agreement because there was this dispute. We already had the pending claims in January of 2018. United Specialty had amended the claims in the declaratory judgment action, asserting as assignee and subrogee the breach of contract action before Judge Reyna. So all of that was already pending when we were before Judge Lopez. WASP Construction, appropriately so, is trying to get their matter resolved and closed on the books, and Judge Lopez, appropriately so, is wanting to finish things. The testimony is clear that the assignment was disclosed to the judge as part of that, and the question posed to me that I want to be clear is, what case law do I have to tell her she can't do that? And we knew of no case law, or certainly I would have raised that at that point, to say, you know, judge, we don't know of any reason you can't do that. I think the import may be different. You know, assignments and subrogations are sort of things that happen in the ether a little bit, like the clouds and Google and all the rest. Because there was a pending case already proceeding with Judge Reyna where these claims were already asserted, it was our submission, and it's something we raised with Judge Lopez, that these matters are now pending in that action. So the import of her dismissal, in our view, would be that it's a void order as relates to the ability of United Specialty to be bringing these claims.
I have a question. I know you're out of time, but can I
ask? Of course.
So I guess, not knowing the specifics of any of that, of what occurred at that hearing, because I did not read, I know you provided that testimony, but I mean, it just seems to me there was a Rule 11 where, in your own admission, Sykes, I guess, as attorney for Con 2, not for your insurance company, agreed, signed off and said, I'm dismissed with prejudice all claims. I mean, they agreed to that and the judge signs it. How is there any right of assignment left? I mean, I guess your argument is that whatever they had to assign was done before that?
The record evidence is that the assignment that was presented for ruling before Judge Reyna in the declaratory judgment action states on its face that it was effective the same day. There's argument about when it was signed and made and who has a burden of proof on that, but the record evidence is that it was in effect the same day. So we would, and I don't want to go too far, but we would argue that there's no law that says that we bore a burden to prove when something was signed or made. That's arguments that Farmers is making. And the issue of the Rule 11 raises the fact that Mr. Sykes was certainly acting on behalf of Can 2, but was not acting on behalf of the insurance company. So I can address more of those issues. I think that really does get to a lot of what is sort of the meat of the case we have here, in addition to the, like I say, the gateway argument on reformation, but I can address that in my last 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court,
yes.
Counsel. On August 26, 2014, Javier Vento, on behalf of WAS, submitted a bid to Falcone. Bid was accepted by Falcone for Can-Do Construction. He wrote contract on it and put a contract number on it. That's a contract. Nothing in that bid document, nothing in the acceptance, referred at all to buying insurance for Can 2 or to indemnify Can 2. He started the work. 4 days later, the accident happened. The Farmers policy states there's two avenues for coverage to be provided to Can 2, to be provided in this case for the loss. One is if Can 2 is an additional insured. The other is if Can 2 has a good lawsuit for indemnity, contractual indemnity against WASP, then WASP would be covered for that under some circumstances. Those circumstances don't apply here. The AI is simple. As the court has noted, the FIE policy, Farmers policy, says that you're an insured as to anybody with whom you, quote, have agreed in writing. Well, there was no agreement in writing at the time of the accident.
There was an agreement in writing, it just did not cover the amended.
Right. To no agreement in writing yet.
Coverage.
No agreement in writing to add Can 2 as additional insurer.
Correct.
So we can't rewrite the bid.
No, but we can rewrite the agreement that was entered 2 weeks later, I think it is, right? About 2 weeks later, the September. Isn't that when it's dated, September?
12th.
We can rewrite that if we find under reformation that there was a mutual mistake. I mean, that's still
right.
Old Texas law, still on the law books.
Right, but as you'll note in my brief, it's really hard to do.
I agree with you.
Texas says when people enter contracts and they're of sane mind, and I think that both Mr. Falcone and Ben Tu were that, that we're going to enforce it. And no matter what it says. And you have to have clear and convincing evidence that there was some sort of oral agreement between Vento and...
That's what my question earlier right. Was there... Well, what are we trying to reform, I think? So are we trying to reform the effect, which is what the conversation I had? Because if we reform the date... and made the date of this contract effective the date he starts work, then you've got a written contract with the additional insured language, which is what's missing from the bid. And so is there evidence from Bento and Vacon that they both agreed that the effective date of this contract, not whatever language it is, would be the day they start at work and not September the 12th?
No. As a matter of fact, Mr. Vacon testified when he was questioned specifically on the point, here's this contract. It says it was, quote, made on September 12th, 2014. Do you stand by that? And he said, yes, I do, which is the opposite of an understanding that the effective date of it was some date prior to the accident. Secondly, I think that if you look at the testimony of Mr. Bento for WASP, he says he didn't know anything that was going to be in the contract. So he didn't intend that it would be effective prior to the accident. If you look at the briefing, and I'll let counsel address this also, the briefing says, WASP briefing says, there is no evidence of reformation. So their position in this court is that, no, we didn't intend for it to be prior to that. Who would do that? I mean, what kind of a person would come back after a paraplegic case has happened and say, yes, what I intended about a contract I knew nothing about was to indemnify somebody for a multi-million-dollar case.
Well, I hope he would do it if it was the truth, and if he was under oath and testified that he said, I understand that I was supposed to have him as an additional insured, and that this contract,
he didn't testify,
even though it was going to be a week later or 2 weeks later, yeah, it was effective the day that we started working. Because the tables could have been turned, and it could be WASP not getting something under this contract for the first 2 weeks he worked.
Well, his testimony was that he did not know, and I'm trying to find the exact quote. I set it out in my brief because it was so clear. He said, I didn't know what was going to be in the contract. The law requires that they meet a clear and convincing standard that both sides intended that there be an effective date. And here, Mr. Vacon testified, no, this made the September 12th date, is I stand by that. So they can't even meet the first part of it, set aside whatever Bento said. More importantly, is it doesn't say you can't, as I pointed out in my brief, the fact that these two parties say that it's effective at some prior date doesn't mean that it was made prior to that date. It means it's effective that date.
Well, that would be binding on the parties. The question is, was it binding on third parties?
Correct. That would be, as between them, fine. If it's reformed to say that, then WASP and Cantu have this effective prior to the date thing. There's no evidence to support it. The contract doesn't support it. And they haven't met the clear and convincing standard. Sorry. But under the coastal...
But even if we reform the date, it doesn't then tie in Farmers Insurance?
No. They tried that in the coastal refining case. USF&G, it's cited at page 16 and 17 of my brief. It says, that was another case, an oral agreement prior to the accident and then a written agreement after. And the court there held, the Houston 14th, our analysis, however, does not depend on coastal's intent regarding the effect of its agreement with Weaver. Insurance policies are contracts, and we interpret the party's intent as reflected in the terms of the policy itself. None of the insurers were parties to the agreement between Weaver and Coastal. And while the service agreement may provide context, we cannot read it as varying or contradicting the policy's terms. Here, our policy, like the policy in that case, has an integration clause. It says the terms of this policy govern the policy. You can't, you know, through some deal you have with a co-partner, change the terms of our policy. I need to take issue also with the statement that there weren't any other cases on this point interpreting this have agreed in writing language. We cited eight of them, beginning at page 18 through 20. from other jurisdictions. Coastal's the closest case we have here on the additional insured issue. In those cases, the courts interpreted have agreed in writing provisions in similar policies. This isn't new. This issue has come up again and again, especially in the context of a subcontractor trying to do a solid for a contractor. Here, we don't even have that. But the courts have held, look, if you allow a prior oral agreement or some understanding or some other gray, fuzzy area, it would effectively nullify the words under written contract in the endorsement itself. This is true with respect to the additional insured endorsement and with respect to the indemnity covered part. Secondly, it would cause an increase in moral hazard because people could get together after an accident happened, like here, and say, hey, listen, I need some extra insurance for this. How about you sign this contract and you can get me some? Well, if we can do that, then I'm going to go to Vegas and make a deal with the blackjack dealer and say, hey, let's get together and say that I got 21 and the casino's going to have to pay. It doesn't work that way.
Was there any type of prime contract between the owner and Cantu Construction that would require additional insured, not only between the owner and the contractor, but as to all future subcontractors?
I don't think that's in the record. I know it's not in the record, and I don't know of any.
Because that, too, could be an agreement. It's just, you know, obviously before the fact.
Right. But
because it doesn't necessarily define who the agreement has to be between.
I don't think that there's such a prime contract in the record.
Okay.
It wasn't brief.
Thank you.
As to the retro effective date, well, this court has held in the Alcoa versus Hydrochem case, sure, you can do things retroactively, but you have to make it clear. Is that the 5 minutes left on my 15, or is it?
That's the 5 minutes left on your 15.
Okay. Don't want to cheat my coach.
No. You're going to get a yellow light.
Okay.
Your 15.
So that, yes, you can do things retroactively, but it has to be clear. Okay, it has to be clear. And this contract, the September 12th contract.
Well, they argue that, and Justice Longoria is correct, that we are familiar with the way of business and that they do these bids, they start work, and they do the contracts later.
Right.
This is not an unusual practice, and everybody knows that the contract ends up being part of it. It just so happened, and in this case, unfortunately, this accident happened before the sign. And I understand your concern, and then we could have this whole thing of people having to do this retroactive. But when you have that this is occurs in this type of business because you want the work to start and you're not worrying about the contract until a week or 2 weeks or even a month later, isn't that exactly why we should be able to retroactively do this contract? Because this occurs in this type of business?
The cases in which that has been held to occur, where the parties have had a course of dealing, Lyda Swinnerton's that way, the Global Intercom case is that way, and the Assicurazioni Generali case. My Italian's not so good.
That was pretty good.
There was a course of dealing, and in fact, in two of them, the parties had actually had a written contract that they'd agreed on, and one of them had signed it, and they're just waiting for the other one to sign when the accident happened. So you have those kinds of situations with a lot stronger facts than here, where you have actually a guy submits a bid, and the contractor, general contractor, says accepted and put writes contract on it. I mean, maybe there was going to be another contract. Maybe there wasn't going to be another contract. I can tell you that Mr. Vento didn't testify that he knew that this was going to be supplanted by a different thing. He just knew that when Mr. Falcone wrote accepted contract number 233, he was going to get paid, and he started doing the work. There was a contract.
Well, the basic mistake here was the boilerplate just was not included with the bid.
That's correct.
I mean, that's the answer to Gina's question. As normally you'd have a line of boilerplate, you'd slap on, staple, and there's your contract.
Sure. It's and even if it was like a Rule 11 agreement like lawyers enter into, there's always that at the mediation, there's always that last line, this is going to be replaced by a more formal contract, if it said something like that. But here, we know how strict Texas courts are about reformation. We know how strict Texas courts are about indemnifying somebody else against their own negligence. And make no mistake, Cantu is the only one being sued for negligence here because WASP had comp and was a comp-paying employer, so they weren't sued for negligence. So under the Ethel doctrine, in order to prove that WASP was agreeing to indemnify somebody, you have to prove strict compliance with Ethel Lewis versus Lee Construction and the other cases. How much more strict should it have to be when you're trying to get somebody to indemnify someone against their own negligence for an accident that's already happened? I mean, that sounds like a 100-foot burden to jump over without any better evidence to have here. They're trying to stick WASP with that. On the indemnity agreement, the way it works is FIE covers WASP's indemnity agreements if they are executed prior to the injury in question. Those are the words. Here, it wasn't. The indemnity agreement was executed 2 weeks after the accident, and so it just doesn't apply. Second, and counsel's going to address this, there was a settlement of that. Eddie Sykes, Jesse Quesada, and George Farah entered into this Rule 11 agreement, and it says Cantu is settling its claims against WASP. This is why FIE paid $1 million to get the case settled, but also to resolve any possible claims there might be against WASP. Now, that wasn't even mentioned in their original brief, so I would have, as we put in our brief, that is the ground for summary judgment on the other side, is there's nothing for us to cover. Since it wasn't briefed, you have to affirm on that point, just on that.
Your time is out.
Thank you. I got that about right.
You did. Mr. Flores, you have 5 minutes to discuss what WASP's position.
Thank you, Justice Benavides. May it please the court, counsel. First and foremost, I'd like to point out that there is absolutely no evidence of reformation, and I don't believe appellant has satisfied its burden to prove so. I think the only evidence here is that there was an original understanding contract, that after the accident, there was a subsequent contract. There was absolutely no evidence in the record that at the time of the initial contract, that WASP understood that they were going to be required to indemnify Cantu Construction or make them additional insured. There's no evidence of their discussion to that effect.
Did WASP make the statement, though, that he would have signed anything that was in front of him?
He made the statement that he would have signed anything that was in front of him, but I don't believe that satisfies their burden to show that there was an explicit understanding at the time of the original contract that he would indemnify them and or defend them for any incident. And I think that's what they have to show in order for them to satisfy their burden to prove a reformation. And none of that is on the record. Two, and I think what I would like to highlight is the binding nature of the settlement agreement. The date of that settlement agreement is September 22nd. That settlement agreement disposes of all claims by Cantu against WASP. That was signed by the attorney representing Cantu, which was in fact hired by this very same insurance company. We have produced some cases to show because Mr. Sykes and their firm was hired by the insurance company, he's acting not only on behalf of Cantu, but also on behalf of the insured. So his actions in signing this Rule 11 agreement will bar forever all claims by either USIC or Cantu against WASP. Now, they're arguing, and the only evidence that they use to show that the settlement agreement is not applicable or does not bar their claims is an assignment dated the exact same day of the settlement agreement. Now, the document they have states it is effective that date, September 22nd. That is no evidence of when this document was actually signed. If it is on them to try to avoid the binding nature of this document, for sure the burden is on them to show that the assignment they have was done and in place prior to the settlement agreement. The evidence in the record does not show that. It is only an effective date, which could have been signed months later. And I believe the evidence in the record supports that, because this document was not produced at the time of the settlement agreement, nor was it produced to the 389th District Court when WASP filed its motion to dismiss Gantu's claims against WASP. They never took this document and said, Judge, you can't do that because we've got an assignment here. This document was not produced until after WASP in the 206 District Court filed its motion for summary judgment. That is the first time this document ever surfaces. Even beyond that, even had this document been in place at the appropriate time, they are stopped because the same attorney hired by the insurance company signed the settlement agreement, and in reliance upon that, FIE paid $1 million to fund the settlement, the plaintiff's settlement. This contribution was accepted by Cantu and USIC to resolve the plaintiff's claims.
In the Rule 11 agreement, was there an entirety clause?
Excuse me?
In the Rule 11 agreement, was there an entirety clause?
The Rule 11 agreement did dispose of all claims.
And did it have the normal representations that the party that is signing this particular document has full authority to do so?
I don't believe it had that language, but the language certainly was there that it disposed of all claims. And all claims against all parties. This was the basis of the motion to dismiss filed in the 389th, which the court granted with prejudice. Now, because of that, we've got a final judgment, and they are precluded by the doctrine of res judicata from bringing these claims. Although their other lawsuit in the 206, the 389th had jurisdiction over these claims and dismissed them. There was no appeal taken, and it's become final. If they wanted somehow to preserve this right, it was incumbent upon them to either try to sever these claims or to ask the court to dismiss those claims without prejudice, which they did not do. The court gave her the opportunity and said, is there any reason I have that I can't dismiss these claims? That was the opportunity to say, Judge, if you dismiss them without prejudice, which was not done, or to ask the court to sever them, again, which was not done. This is a final judgment. No appeal has been taken, and there's no avenue that exists anymore to revive these claims.
Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Justices.
I have 10 seconds. The quote I was looking for, Mr. Bento,
That'll be fine.
Not drilling with permission of the court.
Of course.
Is set out at page 25 of our brief, where he said he started doing the work without knowing exactly what the subcontract, the September contract, would say, and he said exactly. And then the case that says that the defense counsel is the agent of the insurance company as well as the attorney of the insured is also cited in our brief. It's the Supreme Court case, State Farm versus Travel.
Thank you.
We would urge the court to review all of the testimony. Both sides have sort of picked some of the things that seem to work with respect to what Mr. Falcone and Mr. Vento say.
So, Mrs. Vento, that was my question. I will sign anything. Is that not enough language under a clear and convincing standard that he had agreed specifically to the indemnity language?
I wish I had a case that said that, but that is our position. I couldn't find anything that was quite the way it was kind of works, which was Mr. Falcone also said, if you weren't going to agree to these things, then you were not going to do work with us. The pricing was the only thing that they really kind of came to terms with. That's why I think reformation makes me nervous, and dealing with insurance companies makes me nervous, because I'm here representing one. And our position is that the facts of this case is what supports the idea that if that written subcontract with all the wonderful terms and conditions had said any number of different things, we wouldn't be having a lot of these arguments, I think, today, because it would have been on its face, it would have given us a clearer intent. And what we submit is that the deposition testimony, I would have signed anything, and you weren't going to do work for us if you didn't sign it. And first job, coming in, wanting to get that relationship, is what supports the issue here for reformation.
The problem is, how do we get to the third party? I mean, the subsequent contract basically supplants the original bid contract, no question, but until you have that without the boilerplate and the other language that's normally in the bids, you know, basically you're a common law and trying to prove up what the agreement was.
And well, and
you're one removed since you have to prove it up even as to an insurance company. So
yes, Justice.
How do you bind them?
So the way to bind farmers, of course, if that's the issue and it reforms, then we have a contract and the argument for breach of contract just between the two construction companies arguably could move forward. And we submit that those claims were assigned and or subrogated to the carrier. But for purposes of binding the insurer, we would urge the court to study the Texas Supreme Court decision in Mid-Continent versus Global Intercom. And that court was interpreting the exception to the contractual liability exclusion in that policy, another standard policy provision I'm sure this court has dealt with on numerous occasions. And in that situation, we had parties admittedly who had dealt with each other before. They had seen the written contract, but the party who would have gotten the benefit of an AI obligation in its favor or an indemnity obligation in its favor didn't sign until the day after an accident. That was the three men falling to their death tower construction fact scenario. So the court was faced with what to do with subsequent to the execution. So not effective date, but subsequent to the execution. And the Supreme Court has told us that to execute doesn't mean just to sign something. So yet again, I wish I had all the answers. I think it's a little bit of a mess, quite frankly, whether execution equals effective, equal sign, equal made. And the submission from the court, though, and the guidance in that decision is that when they were looking at the exception on that contractual liability exclusion, they said to execute doesn't mean you have to sign it. So they found that the contract that got signed by the second party the day after the three men fell and died was deemed executed before, so the additional insured obligation flowed from the carrier, who of course was disputing that execution had not occurred. And we would submit that the court's ruling in the Global Intercom case is instructive on all of these different issues. The fact that there was prior dealings in Global Intercom doesn't mean that when you look at the testimony back in our case, you have someone saying, I would sign anything, and another person saying, you were going to have to sign this if you were going to do business with us. All of these cases happen, I'm sorry.
But, you know, the fact that there was a contract after the fact, if that party with the bid approval had said later on, I'm not signing anything else, the contractor's in a world of hurt, isn't that true?
Well, arguably that would
be
a different.
Specifically by the bid and the bid contract without all the wonderful stuff that happens after the fact. Now, the guy probably would never get a job again with that company. But.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that's unique about this case related to what, you know, we're here to try and give effect to the intent of the parties is number one. What was the intent of Cantu Construction and WASP Construction? And if it was to be able to live by those terms and to give favor to, with, you know, AI status, which is normal, and indemnity, then I think we should be doing that here. And on those grounds, we would urge reversal of the summary judgments in favor of WASP and Farmers and rendering judgment in favor of the United States.
Justice LaGuardia has one more question before you get just to go enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Yes, sorry, just on some issues brought up, the assignment issue. I was just going back to the hearing where in the 389th where it was dismissed with prejudice. Why didn't you bring up the assignment if it existed at that point in time? She asked, why not? And I looked at that in the interim. And if it existed at that time, why didn't you produce it and say dismiss without prejudice because we do have this assignment?
Well, the assignment was disclosed to Judge Lopez, and it was discussed in front of the court. The fact I think you're asking is why didn't we have the physical assignment to be able to show her?
Yes.
I leave that to the counsel. Better, you know, hindsight is 20/20 on that point. But Judge Lopez knew of the assignment because the position was at the time that we wanted to let that case sort of sit while the other action pended and moved forward, not unlike what you see with a declaratory action.
Sure.
Moving with a tort case and you stay one and you see what happens. That'll be something that may have to happen a different day, but the disclosure of the assignment and the position that those claims have now, via assignment, moved to the other case because the case was already in existence, It's not as though the case had to go be filed. It was already in existence, was something we pointed out that we thought was sufficient to preserve the rights of the parties.
And one more question. The assignment that I saw, one I happened to look at, maybe there's another one in the record, was not signed. Is that...
I can get you the site for the one that is signed
by... Okay, I just wondered if it exists. I just, the one I have is...
There is a signed assignment that states effective the same day as the Rule 11, signed by Mr. Cantu.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Justices.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Anything further? Y'all are released to go enjoy your...